Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Josh, my friend, we've both had a heavy weekend, and I think my voice has largely come back, but we've not talked that much. We just hit the record button and dove in. It is the wind-up. I am Scott Tilford. You are Josh Brown. How's he sounding? How is he doing?
Hopefully okay. I mean, I did a voiceover this morning, so it better sound fine. I've been absolutely knocking back those lozenges like you wouldn't believe, Scott Tilford, I have.
I mean, necking the strepsils. There's any sort of thing that will massage the old vocal cords will get me through. But we thought we've got two wind-ups left for the year. So we're going to do a traditional one, if there is such a thing as a traditional Monday wind-up show at this point. And by grounding up all the different news items right now, we're talking about different leaks and stuff. Splinter Cell, Ubisoft stuff, Henry Cavill's Mass Effect show, a potential Mass Effect show, and a few other things. And then next week, we're going to do a little bit different. We're going to sort of do a little thing. We'll do a little check-in about how we've what different things we've played, what different things we've experienced across the last year. In a bit, wider than gaming, talking about music, talking about movies, talking about different things that have just sort of got us by. But that's for next week. That's a celebratory Christmas style thing.
Yes.
For now, it's all things gaming. So let's talk about Splinter Cell and the fact that Ubisoft are bringing this thing back. As of literally this morning, when we record this on the Monday, they've filed a new trademark for Splinter Cell. Now, it is literally just the name Splinter Cell. It doesn't have a subtitle or anything. So it kind of feels like a soft reboot. And the general conversation around this leak is that it's going to be, and I quote, a more stealthy Assassin's Creed, which is kind of hilarious because that's what Assassin's Creed used to be anyway. But also implies it's going to be like a semi-open world thing, or at least an open world thing. But we do also have comments from Jeff Grubb saying that from what he's heard, Ubisoft are taking influence from IO Interactive and Hitman, which would be the more ideal way to go. Just get a series of levels that you can access, maybe download, update across months after launch, and just give me little play spaces over time that I can drop in and do missions, Splinter Cell Blacklist style. And one last thing to mention in regards to the trademark stuff is that they have changed some of the phrasing on the newest trademark filing, removing the term interactive multiplayer computer game, this is according to VGC, and replacing it with providing an online computer game, which I hope means that they, I mean, I would take Spies versus Mercs at this point.
I definitely would.
But I also wonder if the whole providing an online service thing means that they are going down the Hitman route, that it is just going to be ostensibly as many levels as they can do over X amount of time and just do it that way.
I like the idea of that. You know, I mean, Hitman's just an unbelievable stealth series. And when this thing was like first, you know, revealed and stuff, all of the people were saying one of the big reasons why Ubisoft has put a new Splinter Cell into production is because they have a very bad image problem at the moment, and
they're horrendous right now.
Worst it's ever been, which I'm sure we'll get into in more detail in a second. But like they've essentially greenlit this to be like, right, this is what people have been asking for. Let's do this properly and hopefully win back some respect from the players, or at least a bit of love from the players. Mm-hmm. And it's like they can't afford to mess it up, man. Like they can't afford to make this another crappy live service that plays like all of their other games. They need to be looking, like you said there, at the giants in the genre that are doing this stuff perfectly. And Hitman is a great example of, you know, putting a lot of polish into your game, focusing on stealth, focusing on the thing you do best, and then giving players loads and loads of content around that. And if you do have an open world Splinter Cell where you have targets and it's just you kind of like getting through those levels, you know, ghosting past other enemies and trying to get the drop on them, like that sounds good. That sounds like what Blacklist kind of started hinting at and in blowing that up and giving you more choice, hopefully.
The thing is, like, if they, we talked about this before, but the thing is, whenever I think of an open world Splinter Cell, I just think of, do you know the old Punisher? In, when Punisher first appeared in, I think it was like this, when he had the blue suit and it was the Punisher, before he was known for being like the super gory, you know, torture man, he was just a dude in a blue suit who fired rubber bullets back in the day. And he used to drive around in a war van, the battle van, I think it was called. And he had a little mate called Microchip who would drive around. And it was in the animated series as well. And Microchip would give him a ring and be like, hey, there's a target over there. And he'd be like, cool. He'd whap the jetpack on and he'd fly over there and he would do all that. And I can't not shake the idea that an open world Splinter Cell or an open world Sam Fisher would just have a little battle van, would just be driving around. I don't know how else you do it, because what is he, how do you even make that character get around? Like, he's not a vehicle, you know, familiar man.
You give him like some drones to like sort of hang off of, to fly, and then you just sort of fly around like that. No, I know. I mean, maybe you could like incorporate village. Maybe you could incorporate vehicles like in Ghost Recon Wildlands, which is, you know, ostensibly a stealth game. You can play it in stealth. It wants to be sometimes. So you could maybe incorporate that. You know, you could get the men with Ven in, and you know, have them drive around. That was a little Peep Show reference that I tried to.
I knew that. And I was like, is that that weird Irish Viper lad that you keep sending me? I was like, maybe it's him.
No.
Putting in beans? No, it's not.
You could have a, you know, your man in the chair who's driving you around from mission to mission. Or maybe it's just kind of like the Hitman thing where, like, you don't need vehicles or anything to get around there. Mm. You just have these discrete kind of mini sandboxes that you can play around in. Maybe that solves all of the issues right there.
You would hope so. I mean, the thing is, like, when or what was the last time, I can't do two sentences at once. When was the last time Ubisoft gave you a game that was genuinely impressive? When was the last time you played something that you went, okay, either it's an execution on a formula that's solid enough, like Far Cry 6 is solid enough. But if we're talking about when was the last time Ubisoft wowed, when was that for you where you were like, oh my God, okay, this is really, really cool?
Oh my, I've never thought about it in these terms. And just rolling back the years is illuminating how much they have not done this over the past generation. I don't think there's anything off the top of my head over the past generation that has wowed me from that publisher, man. Like, genuinely, I can't think. Like, I like Watch Dogs 2. You know, I like Far Cry 5, but they didn't wow me in that way.
No, the last time that I went, like, I'm really glad you guys made this, is the UbiArt stuff. It's Child of Light and it's Valiant Hearts, especially Valiant Hearts. Which obviously they tried for a couple of years, and those games did well enough. Rayman Legends would be another one where I was like, this is genuinely so impressive. But those were 2014, 2013, like, it's a while ago. Ever since they discovered the Far Cry formula, the Assassin's Creed formula, it's just been that over and over again. And so, like, I like the likes of Steep and Riders Republic because it's something a little bit different. But, like, yeah, they've not... I mean, that's the thing. I have zero faith in Ubisoft. Like, I just did a tweet being like, it is literally the worst version of this company trying to make one of the biggest returns, one of the biggest comebacks in gaming history. Like, Splinter Cell's been away for almost a decade. And for a while, it was such a, you know, a totemic series. Like, stealth as a genre was literally Splinter Cell, Hitman, Metal Gear. And if, like, Metal Gear's gone away, then it's about time Splinter Cell came back. But I have negative faith that they will get this right. I think it'll just be some weird open-ended hodgepodge.
I think, you know, every time we talk about this subject, I'm sure Ben Roy always just says, you know, just rip off the Phantom Pain, just rip off Metal Gear Solid 5 the Phantom Pain and you'll have a great game. Just literally do that, Ubisoft. Like, that's all you need to do. Rip off the Phantom Pain, change the location, and you've got like the best stealth game ever made right there, because I guess that is how you do an open world stealth game.
Literally.
Like, you know, something like Hitman.
And you can carry over like the mechanics from like Blacklist, like give me the mark and execute stuff. Let me find things on the world that let me like sort of like do other, like unlock the split jump, I guess, and different things like that. And maybe have it so that like the version of Pequod in Splinter Cell, the version of the helicopter, would just be one of those echelon planes that picks you up, a helicopter that drops you off somewhere else. And you can just kind of take in a bunch of little pockets of enemies.
I'll tell you this, you said something there that if they put in an upgrade tree to make me, you know, unlock the split jump or the split
you only get one leg first, because that's what he had in Pandora Tomorrow, then you unlock the second leg.
My friend, I will be throwing hands, I would not be happy whatsoever. Let's move away from the Ubisoft skill tree. Unlock guns and weapons and gadgets, that's totally fine, you know, at your home base or whatever, but nah, don't make me unlock those basic abilities ever again.
Part of me thinks, okay, I'm literally going to put it down that if they do a split jump unlock, that I've called it here. I think you'll get one leg first and the second leg after that. I'm just calling that now, because that's what they did in Pandora Tomorrow. He eventually got a one-legged split jump. But But yeah, overall, zero faith in Ubisoft, but I have to kind of hope that they'll pull it around. Let's quickly talk about Ubisoft Quartz, which is Ubisoft very much getting on the NFT train, which every single executive level person who's managed to actually do an interview with a journalist has said that no one really understands any of this NFT stuff. It's very much just an opportunistic thing. It's a buzzword. It's something that's been sold to the higher ups in various companies. And it's an easy way, or potentially easy way, to try and make money just off the literal philosophy of ownership. Just sort of saying to someone, hey, would you like to pay to say that you own X visual, X cosmetic, X whatever it is, but you don't actually own the license. You don't actually own the code. You don't actually own anything other than saying that you own it. So it's just like that whole thing, which, you know, Ubisoft got out there and launched their NFT platform, NFT Quartz, I was going to say, Ubisoft Quartz, which got 95% dislikes on YouTube, so they immediately pulled it. but it's still being talked about as a potential thing. Now, I said to you a while ago, I think it might have been on one of these podcasts. Actually, no, it would have been last year. But, you know, as the sort of generation turns over and microtransactions were the absolute worst thing of the last generation, not that they went away altogether, but you want to hope that to some degree they've got more palatable, minus 15-pound skins in Halo Infinite. But I was always thinking, what's the next thing that's going to come along and just throw everything out of whack again? And it feels like this is the thing. Like, Ubisoft obviously took the first step, but do you think there's any way that this stuff like gets done in a way that's remotely consumer friendly eventually?
I don't think so, man, because like you said, you know, it's coming from the higher ups and they've suddenly just gone, NFTs the future, this is what we're going to do, and this is what the people want. It's like, who have you asked? Where have you got this information from? What market research have you done? And it's just, it's hilarious that Ubisoft's trying it, man, because, you know, obviously Ubisoft had a disastrous year last year with all of the sexual misconduct allegations that were coming out. We hoped that in the wake of that, they would try to rebuild. They would try to, you know, be better to their staff and be better to players, and they seemingly have not done that over this past year at all. When it comes to the games especially, you know, they've had to do so many of these U-turns, you know, like they announced that, what was it, the Ghost Recon?
I was just going to say that Battle Royale thing.
Yeah.
They pulled the trailer for that. It's like, exactly. Is this what you want? Oh, it's not. Oh, sorry. Like, we could have done it better.
We're like, oh, we'll delay that indefinitely now. And then they've announced this Quartz gimmick and they've got all of these downvotes. They've got actually maybe not. It's just like, who are they asking? Who is in charge?
Also,
the clown company.
Just thinking like the the clown car. They don't have, as far as I know, there's no Ubisoft characters in Fortnite. I don't know why I just thought of this, but I was just thinking like, do they even play well with others at this point? Because like they must have been approached. They must have had a conversation with someone from Epic going like, look, we're going to get Kratos in. We're going to get Master Chief in. Do you want Ezio to be in there? Do you want Rayman to pop up in there? And like, as far as I know, there's not any Ubisoft characters in Fortnite, and yet there is everything else. You would think that Ubisoft would be on that stuff, but they seem to be all entirely exclusive. They're entirely just like, no, we are the big deal. We know what we're doing.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's why they're trying their own hero shooters, you know, starring there.
What about that as well? X-Defined?
Yeah, lots of bad stuff, man. but even the characters you mentioned there, why not get Ezio in, et cetera, et cetera? Why not get Sam Fisher in? They're decades old at this point. Yeah. Like, they've got no new memorable characters. They keep trying to push, like, some of the operators from Rainbow Six, which I guess are memorable, but they're not really, you know, characters per se, really, in the same way that Ezio made an impact, you know, in the mainstream. And it's like, they keep trying these new things, but they've got like no identifiable, in, you know, mascots isn't really the word, but for lack of a better term, they've got none of those like big hitter mascots anymore. And the ones that they are kind of like pulling back to are the likes of Sam Fisher to kind of win back, you know, some fan love, like I was saying.
Fisher,
it's just strange.
That thing feels like them going like, we're in a horrible place right now. Like someone somewhere has managed to sort of nudge enough executives to be like, can we do it now? Can you let us do it now? Like this, you know, and try and sell it on the optics of like, this will be an upswing. This will be something that people will like us for. And the response of, you know, finally getting a new Splinter Cell, like ostensibly confirmed at this point, did go down largely well and has been the only positively received thing in recent history with them. But there is just the reality of everything else about that company just being a bit of a fire. Like, it's just going to take some time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now, and I'm telling you now, Scott Tiffin, NFTs aren't the water that you want to be putting on that fire, Al. No. It is not. It is absolutely not.
They will absolutely try. If they manage, if Ubisoft Quartz comes back, they will 100% sell Sam's green goggles or a certain shade of green for some stupid premium price. Because that was, I forget which, I was talking about this with one of my friends yesterday. There was an executive who said, imagine a world where we sell you Mario and Mario Kart and only you can play as Mario. And he thought that was the best thing ever. And I was like, that's the end of the world right there. That's the literal end of art.
It's the end of culture. It's the end of human existence.
UVP, but remember when Bethesda tried to trademark the word scrolls? And King tried to trademark the word saga. It's just that. Writ large.
I mean, we're literally in the era of Take Two, trying to ban It Takes Two from having that name because it kind of is similar to it. And I'm pretty sure they're doing it with Rockstar as well. And it's just like, what era are we going into, man? Like, it's the end of 2021 and 2022. Not to get too down on it, but in terms of video games and companies and how they work, it's looking bleak.
I want to own everything, and give me all of it. I want to own this. Yeah. This word, it's mine. Like, I'm just gonna have all this different stuff. I remember Bill Burr pointed out that the owner of Nestle once said that he wants to own the water, and it's just like brilliant. It's just sort of like ration out the way water's used. I think it feels like this extension of branding and franchising and just being like, we're gonna try and own every last permutation of this given thing, and then let you buy parts of it. So that you can also have that feel of owning stuff, because there's a whole other thing to break down about, I guess, the philosophy of ownership and entitlement in gaming and why people buy into this stuff anyway, and just selling you or monetizing that feeling of just sort of like, oh, if Nintendo ever did sell Mario as an NFT, the person who had that would feel a whole bunch of emotions. And I think that's the thing that in the corporate world, they're like, well, that's an incredible price tag that we can attach to that. Which is a really horrible thing to mete out over time.
It's kind of fortunate that Nintendo are like 5 years behind everyone else, because they would go mad with NFTs. Like, they went mad with like Amiibos and stuff. You know, they would be like,
oh, I love Amiibos.
They love anything with like artificial scarcity, don't they? Mm-hmm. So they'd be, oh man, you're right. I don't want to. Nintendo, if they do go in on NFTs, they're going to be whole ass in on them.
They, thankfully, I mean, they've not even got a sort of like barely functioning voice chat on the Switch. So it's not, they're a little while behind. They just added Banjo-Kazooie N64 game to the Switch online service. So we got a little while yet before all this stuff comes to full fruition. Next big story, though, is Henry Cavill saying that he's interested in Amazon's Mass Effect TV show. He was asked about this during the Witcher press conference stuff for the season 2 of The Witcher. And he said, it all depends on how they're executing it. He said, the world of adaptation can be heavy or light. When I like a product, I prefer the adaptation to be less changed from the source, so it all depends. But this, obviously, all this stuff is kind of all up in the air anyway, because Amazon are still pursuing Mass Effect as a thing, and it hasn't really been locked down yet. But overall, what do you think about even the idea of doing a Mass Effect TV show? Because they'd have to cast a Shepard. Like, assumedly, that's why they were talking to Cavill about it. But it's like, once you've like locked down a gender for Shepard, do you not arguably remove a hell of a lot of the appeal of that character?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with MasterClass. With MasterClass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with MasterClass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Well, this is the big question mark, isn't it? And it's kind of like what Cavill was saying there, because, you know, he's talking about like how much you would change from the source material, how little you would change. But when you adapt an RPG like this, you inherently have to make big changes, because I might look at how the TV show plays out and say, that's not how my shepherd acted during that scene, or that's not what my decision went like and stuff. And it's kind of, you know, there's a Fallout TV show in the works as well. And I can understand why these two shows have been chosen, because the world of Fallout, the world of Mass Effect is so rich with lore. People love it. You can make so many stories in those worlds. But if you're adapting more than the world, if you're adapting the actual games, that's when it gets tricky, because they're RPGs, they're player focused, they're player driven. So much of how they play out and so much of their meaning comes from what the player puts into it. And there are stories that you can choose from there that would still be satisfying, but I don't think they're games that you can use and then please everyone with. It's not like a straightforward thing like The Last of Us, for instance. When that comes out, we can all look at how the story went in the game and how it went in the show. We can make direct comparisons because we all, by and large, had the same experience. With Mass Effect and Fallout, completely different. Even down to something like Henry Cavill potentially being Shepard, I can look and be like, well, I was Femshep, you know, like that's, you're not, you know, you it's just, there's so much minutiae and so many different details that have to be taken into account that it's not a job I envy.
No, I think I forget what the name of the member of BioWare was, but someone was on Twitter saying it's quite easy to make this cringe. Like if you get any part of this wrong, it just doesn't have the same weight, doesn't have the same feeling to the lore, it doesn't have the same sort of sense of progression across that story. I do wonder though if they pick from other stuff in the timeline. Like I guess like what would you if you were Mr. Amazon, which is literally Mr. Jeff Bezos, but I mean just Amazon's creative overall, and you're handed the keys to Mass Effect. Do you even attempt to redo the games? Do we build back up to that stuff, or do you do like the first Contact War or something else entirely?
This is the thing, right, dude? Because I think of it and I think it would be a mistake to adapt the characters as they were in the game. And maybe you should just do something set inside that universe, maybe a side story or whatever, or like you say, a prequel, first Contact War, whatever.
You'd have to cast someone to wear like a Garrus mask or whatever, which would be really weird.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I think the Reapers as a concept is almost too juicy to waste, you know, to not do, because that's such a great driving force for the whole thing. You know, you can have the big conversation with their, you know, Sovereign and whatever. You can have like all of these big moments, these huge stakes. And it's like, at the same time, I don't want them to just adapt the game, but the setting of the game and the thrust of the game is like, well, if you don't do that, you're also kind of shooting yourself in the foot. Like I said, I'm not envious of it at all.
I think I like the idea of them, because the thing is with like doing the whole, you know, like a super powerful ancient space race is coming to wipe out humanity, whatever it is. That as a trope has been done a lot. But yeah. I feel like Mass Effect was one of the originals to do it with a certain level of production that it almost feels like it owns it. And I feel like it, you kind of can say that certain things are Mass Effect adjacent because it just does that trope so well. But yeah, I wonder if they, you know, they can do like an old something older in the timeline so you avoid the casting of Shepard, have someone like Henry Cavill do the First Contact War, or do something like, you know, the Leviathan DLC in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah,
like you sort of
yeah.
do like the proto Reaper stuff. You do something that leads into Mass Effect. Because I wonder how much BioWare are even involved in this stuff too. Like obviously they'll be involved in the licensing side of it, but they're right now planning whatever the hell the next Mass Effect game is too. And like the teaser for that showed a Geth, so it's just like, are we doing something? Are they trying to do something that is bringing the Geth back? And then the Geth are an iconic part of Mass Effect lore, so that also crosses yeah. over into the TV show. I guess just where are you at on Mass Effect as an IP? Like, does any of this get you like excited, or is it just like, well, I hope it's not terrible?
I mean, it gets me excited through the inherent fact of this is all I ever wanted when I was like 15. Like right. I would search weekly online to see if anything was happening.
More than twice that age now, Josh Brown.
But I would genuinely search all the time to see if a Mass Effect film or a Mass Effect TV show was in the works. Mm. So the fact that it's finally happening, it's kind of like, ooh, I don't know if I would want it now, but of course I'm going to be excited for it, especially after playing the Legendary trilogy earlier on this year that got me re-excited about the franchise. But I'm more just kind of like cautiously optimistic about the future now. I hope the next game is good. I hope this TV show is good. And I hope it can reach the heights that it did in, you know, the early 2010s, the late 2000s. That was something else.
The thing is as well, like you talk about, we talk about like, you know, Amazon sci-fi shows. I'm really liking The Expanse. I put that off for a while, but the production just didn't sell me on it. But then I sort of just stuck with it, did a few episodes, and I was like, okay, this is actually really, really cool. I get what people like about it. It has a certain depth to it. There's a lot of different factional warfare stuff, and there's a lot more to that show than I thought. But at the same time, you know, you look at something like the teaser for the Halo show, and I think it's really easy for something to be sort of very synthetic looking. It's overly clean. I think in a world of 4K yeah. resolutions and, you know, very very clean filming techniques that you like, it's, you never really get stuff that's gritty anymore or stuff that sort of feels believable in that way. It feels like people in costumes, whether in The Witcher season one, it felt like people in costumes in a field or in a forest. And that's just like, for me, that's one thing that always kills those kinds of shows. So I that's one thing that I'm curious about. But we can roll in the Halo show as well. What did you think of the way the Halo teaser looked?
It looked okay.
Clean, didn't it?
It looked clean.
Neil Blomkamp had a better teaser back in the day.
Oh, well, this is it, man. Like you alluded to there, you know, a lot of these sci-fi shows, and granted, it's not my genre. You know, I'm not big on sci-fi TV shows. I can't even name you one that I've watched to the end, for instance. But part of why I'm kind of like put off by them is because they all look the same. Like you said, like even if it's Halo, whether it's something else, like all these space set shows, like you said, have a very like obvious look to them and have a shared look to them in a kind of, I can't pick them out of a crowd in a way. And I was looking at the Halo thing and thinking, I can't pick this really out of a crowd either. And that kind of is a shame for a franchise.
Well, for the Halo thing, it's like, well, that's a Pelican ship. Like, I mean, they've nailed the look of Master Chief, but other than that, it is still, it's another very glossy, very clean sci-fi show. And it's just, I think if this is a separate thing almost, but it's that whole thing of, like I said, it's like we're in a world of like, you know, like hyper clean 4K resolutions, like trying to get to 8K resolutions, and people with massive TVs and everything. So it's like, well, do you need a very clean looking show? Like there is that whole thing about the way that Netflix will let people make shows, but you have to use specific cameras, specific lenses, specific color grading, because that's what Netflix sells. And I kind of wonder, as Amazon established themselves as well, and they're pursuing the likes of Mass Effect, they have The Expanse, they have Lord of the Rings coming up, and whether they'll also have that similar thing of like, well, we need it to be this clean, we need it to be this you know, immediately visually impressive to the vast majority of people, and we can't risk having a level of grit or a level of lens flare or whatever, because that detracts from, you know, working for the most people.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I don't think it's just a telly thing either. I think the MCU, for as much as I love it, has had a negative impact on how films look. Because I really enjoy the MCU, I don't like the way those movies look for the most part. You know, I'm like, why does Spider-Man look this gray? Like, why is this not more colorful and more exciting? And even though I'm not a huge fan of the DC Extended Universe, I like that
it's more identifiable.
Yeah, it's more identifiable. Mm. They at least tried different things with how those movies are filmed, you know, the colors that they're allowed to get away with. It doesn't look as homogenous as the MCU, and I feel like we're seeing that in the telly space, especially like you said, in the streamers, where obviously they're pushing the big 4K stuff because they can sell you a more expensive subscription to make you get that 4K look. And that, for some shows, they can pull it off really well. But when it comes to something like, you know, as big as sci-fi, and Mass Effect particularly is going to need a huge budget because the scale of that thing is off the charts. Like, it needs to look identifiable. It needs to look as good as the games looked back in 2007.
There's so many aliens to put in that. Like, there's, I mean, if you're going to do like crazier stuff like the Hanar or whatever, like, you're going to have to do a big floating jellyfish. Or like, if you do the main crew, you're going to have a convincing looking Krogan or something like that. Like, and yeah, I think they've got quite a high bar to get over. And obviously the deal hasn't been finalized yet as of recording. But it's a curious thing to try and adapt at this point in its life cycle. Like you said, if you were 15 when this got announced, back when Mass Effect was still a huge deal, we'd be flipping out about it. But like, we're post Mass Effect 3, we're post Mass Effect Andromeda, Mass Effect is all by all accounts dead right now. We're waiting for it to come back anyway, so I guess we'll see what happens with the TV side of things. Some of the last things we should talk about is the Matrix Unreal 5 demo, the thing that I feel like was the biggest talking point coming out of the Game Awards. It was released, I think, during the Game Awards, but it kind of got tied into that thing, which is the gameplay. It's a free demo. It's about 30 gigs big. You can play it on PS5 or Series X, and it's just a full-on, like, interactive showcase of what Unreal 5 can do. And for me, it made me think of The Getaway on PlayStation 2. I don't know if you played that back in the day, but I remember when that was, like, the photo reel, oh my god, this is what games can look like moment. And I had that in this thing, because you initially do like a shooting sequence which is very close to the end of the Matrix highway scene back in 2005 or whenever that game came out, and then you're just allowed to just roam around in the city for as much as you want. And that's when the photoreal stuff really hits you. Like, you can disconnect the camera and fly around, go around the rooftops and stuff, and they've recreated Mega City 1, or whatever you call the main city of the Matrix, and it's just a full-on showcase of what Unreal 5 is going to be doing. So my takeaway from this, like, obviously it plays gorgeously, it's very on rails, you just aim at different tires on the road and shoot out different agents' cars and stuff, but it looks incredible. The character models look incredible, and I had this feeling where I was like, okay, this is next gen. Like, we're 1 year into the generation, but there hasn't really been that much stuff, if anything, that you could say this fundamentally doesn't work or wouldn't run on older hardware. When you look at this, obviously I'm hanging that on the visuals, but the sheer visuals of this thing just are ludicrous. Like, it feels like this couldn't be done on older hardware, and that warmed my heart as someone who wants new stuff, as someone who's just been going, can you stop releasing God of War on the PS4? I bought the new shiny thing to play new shiny things, and this is very much a new shiny thing.
Yeah, man, like, I was blown away by it, you know, both in terms of the character models and how they successfully recreated both old and young versions of, you know, the actors, like Keanu Reeves, Carrie-Anne Moss, all of that stuff. But yeah, like, seeing it in motion, that's the thing that really blew my mind, in the scale of it. You know, what I love is big skyscrapers, because I don't see big skyscrapers in my daily life. And I love it when a game tries to make cities as to scale as possible. It's why I really love the Division 1, because that had a sense of verticality that you just didn't really see in sandbox city games before. Mm-hmm. And when you get to walk around this version of it, and you see how vertical this city is, how imposing the city looks, I just thought, that's next gen. That's something I've not seen done ever in my life as well as this.
Yeah, like, I was lucky enough to go to New York a couple of years ago, and like, yeah, like, obviously we're just Northeast England boys. We don't know what this giant city's like. And I see if you can go down to London and stuff, but there's something about, you know, like, there's a Japanese term called forest bathing, where you get lost in a forest. You don't know exactly where you're going, you don't know exactly where you came from, and you can just enjoy the forest entirely and get completely lost in it. I love that term. And like, it made me think of that when you're in a massive city. Like, obviously they're almost polar opposites if you're going to try and invoke the tranquility of a forest, but there's something about being lost in a big city, in terms of, like you said, the size of the towers, like, there's all the reflections, there's the way that light refracts through different streets and stuff. But for me, when I went to New York, I was like, oh my god, this feels incredible. Like, it feels very filmic and things like that. And so when you play this Matrix thing, it feels like being in a massive city, which shouldn't be the hardest thing to pull off, but you don't realize how much you know, you need all those reflections, all that light refraction, all those ray tracing elements and reflections on the floor, and the amount of people that are there as well. Where once all those things come together, it does have an elevating sensibility. Like, it did make me go like, okay, this is kind of what it felt like Cyberpunk was going to be. Like, when those initial conversations happened about, like, oh, it's the most realistic city you've ever seen in a video game, and obviously corners had to be cut at some point to get that game out the door, this feels like the most realistic city that there's ever been. And I know it's a tech demo, but it's a very, very promising one for the future of open world stuff.
That's it. I mean, you know, we've been blown away by tech demos in the past that haven't, you know, fully lived up to it. And I'm sure whatever gamers going to be using this tech is still going to be a good few years out yet. But it just, it felt more tangible, probably because we could play it. It felt more tangible than a lot of previous tech demos have in the past. And it felt like a proper vision of the future. That got me excited about next-gen and next-gen capabilities. What also got me really hyped is, I think it was Mike Bithell on Twitter. I could be wrong about this. He did
a big thread about what it means for game development, yeah.
That's exactly it. What it means for game development and, like, indie game development, especially, and how it's essentially going to, like, raise the bar, because you've got, like, these, you know, photoreal assets that a lot of people can, like, pull from now and then tweak and change. And that got me excited, too, to see how, you know, Unreal Engine 5 in particular is going to not only aid the very top of the pile like Rockstar, Naughty Dog and stuff, but how it's going to trickle down and impact, you know, every game that we play. That was tantalizing stuff.
That's the thing. Like I feel, because obviously Epic get a lot of flack, like, but like obviously for being like the Fortnite people and all the Epic Game Store stuff and whatever, but a rising tide raises all ships, and the Unreal Engine always raises that tide. Like, as soon as the software that's available to every level of game developer is this good, then you're going to see the indie scene has come on such a long way across the eighth generation. If they're going to have access to this sort of stuff, then that's kind of incredible. And it's not about seeing a million different realistically rendered cities. I want to see what the likes of Mike Bithell do with this rendering tech, with whatever their imagination, whatever direction that takes them. Like, that is fascinating. That's what, like, makes the gaming industry one of the most exciting things to watch unfold.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Unreal Engine 3 absolutely dominated the Xbox 360 era. Like, that was in every single game. And while Unreal Engine 4 kind of, like, had its perks, especially in how accessible it was, it felt like it never really reached that level again. No. But Unreal Engine 5, like, this demo, it sort of feels like Unreal Engine 3 did back at the time, you know, like this proper step forward that's going to define the generation. And whether it does or not, whether it's got some competition, will remains to be seen. But it got my skin tingling a little bit, I'll tell you that.
The thing is as well, I forget what you call the design lead on this. I know it was conceptualized, I think, by Lana Wachowski. She was was saying that she actually got in touch with them and Carrie-Anne Moss and said, would you be up for doing this? And that's how they managed to get them involved. But the overall lead coder, lead designer of the game demo itself said they are going to be adding a combat model to it, and they are going to be adding, like, more gameplay elements to it. So I wonder if this just slowly turns into a Matrix game, like, because it's got driving already, and you can walk around, you can sprint, add some basic open world mission design, and you can have a little bit of fun with it, because, like, there's a promising thing here that almost feels like a next gen Matrix Online. Like, there's maybe a way to plug those things in too, but yeah, very, very promising. And there hasn't been a Matrix game since Path of Neo and Matrix Online shut in 2011, so it's very promising. But yes, thank you all very much for listening. It's been the wind up. We'll catch you next week for the last show of the year, and I've been Scott Taylor, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
We'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.